We're continuing our study in the 35th Psalm. David is writing about a time in his life here in which he was very distressed. He had had those who were his friends, those that he'd helped whenever they were in need, those that he'd done good to. Now they turned against him and become his enemies. They were saying false things about him. They were treating him as though he were before a judge to be tried, and they were bearing witness against him. They were doing their best to bring him down. And so this is most distressing to David, and he is writing his feelings about this. In the first 10 verses, he prays to God that these people will not be successful in their efforts against him. He prays that God will be against them and that God will cause them to be defeated in their efforts to bring him down. Because this condition that David found himself in, a situation in which former friends had now turned out to be his enemies and were opposing him, because this is such a common situation, it does occur. Each one of us may have this at one time or another in our lives. And that makes this psalm very beneficial for us because we can see how that a righteous person is to act, how a righteous person is to respond under those adverse conditions. And David is showing us here. In our previous lesson, we covered these first 10 verses in which he gave his prayer to God that these persons who were opposing him would not be successful. Now, beginning in the 11th verse, we have David describing the character and the conduct of his enemies. He gives a description of them, and this is most beneficial also for us because we can see what kind of persons would be our enemies, what kind of persons that we can identify from the Bible as being those that are the enemies of the children of God. Verse 11 says, "False witnesses did rise up. They laid to my charge things that I knew not." Now these persons that were opposed to David, they were false witnesses. That is, they were saying things about him, saying things that were not true, that had a definite bearing upon David. This is translated not only as false witnesses, but some translate it as violent witnesses, or witnesses of violence. Others translate this as witnesses of wrong. And of course, this was a part of their motive. Their intention was to bring some kind of violence against David, to bring wrong against David. And of course, any time we find persons that are bearing false witness, persons that are telling the lie, that are not telling the truth, we have someone that's going to be the enemies of the children of God. This is a defect in character. It is a sin. It is a robbery. And a lie is something we definitely must keep ourselves from. So that's what they did against David. They were false witnesses. They did rise up. They laid to my charge, he says, things that I knew not. It's as though he were here before a court, before a judge. And these people were testifying against him. Not only were they testifying false things against him, but they laid to my charge. That is, they, according to some translations, they demanded an answer of things that I knew not. I wasn't even aware of having done the things that they accused me of. I was totally innocent of any wrongdoing. They were saying things that I knew not and demanding an answer for it. Verse 12 further describes, "They rewarded me evil for good to the spoiling of my soul." Now, I had done good to them. I had helped them in times of need. I had done nothing to hurt them or harm them in any kind of way, but they gave me evil for good. Instead of returning good for good, or instead of returning good for evil, they gave evil for good. And it was something that did definitely have an adverse effect upon me. It was to the spoiling of my soul. And this word spoiling means the forsaking of my soul. That is, he was left in a desolate condition. The way they treated him, they left him without any friends, apparently. They left him without any means of sustaining himself. And so it wasn't just a matter of they turned on him and no longer wanted to be his friend, but they really did him some damage here. It was to the spoiling of his soul. After showing how they acted toward him, how they turned against him, then beginning in verse 13, he described his own conduct, his own activity toward them, showing how different he behaved toward them, what a contrast his actions were toward their actions. Verse 13 says, "But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer returned into mine own bosom." Here he shows what his conduct was when they were having trouble. They were sick. When they were sick, we don't know what kind of sickness it was, but whatever sickness, it was some kind of a distressful condition for them to be in. When this happened to them, he says, my clothing was sackcloth. That is, I behaved myself in a very humble way. I was very disturbed by their problems. It affected me. I put on the sackcloth. That is, I didn't go around and rejoice and feel happy at their problem or their condition, their sickness, their pain, their suffering, but I suffered along with them. I put on sackcloth, that is, clothing that is made out of material that's only fit for sacks, to show a sign of a state of mourning. I humbled my soul with fasting. I didn't feast while this happened, but I rather fasted. I was very sympathetic with their problem, with their condition. And he further says, my prayer returned into mine own bosom. Now, this idea of prayer returning into the own bosom really indicates the mode that he was in while praying. That is, he had his head bowed down so that his speech went right into his bosom. And this is indicative of not only a very earnest prayer, but a prayer that's given in a state in which he is very sympathetic with their problem. He is feeling grief. He's feeling humility and pain right along with his friends. And he further says in verse 14, I behaved myself as though he had been my friend or brother. I bowed down heavily as one that mourneth for his mother. Here he shows his true dedication for those who had been his friends but now were his enemies. He says, I behaved myself as though he had been my friend or brother. The word behaved here is translated as walked. It's his way of life was of such a nature that he conducted himself as though he were a true friend or even a brother, a close relative. He hadn't just had a casual acquaintance with these persons. He hadn't just treated them as though they were somebody that he knew remotely, but rather it was like a friend or a brother. He said, I bowed myself down heavily as one that mourneth for his mother. I had as much mourning or I had as much grief at your problem, at your sickness, as though it had been my own mother. Now, of course, this is a statement that shows that David had a very close relationship with these persons because we can get no closer than our mother. When we think of our mother, we only have one mother and only have one mother to lose. And in this life, while we have our mother, she is our closest friend. She's the one we can come to with all of our trials and problems. She's the one who wants nothing bad to happen to us. She's the one who's going to do everything in her power to cause us to have good happen to us. She wants our best interest to be served at all times. And so we have a very close feeling for mother. And then to lose mother is one of the most tragic losses that we can have in our lives. Well, he's illustrating this by saying that he treated these friends, when they were his friends, as though they were his mother when it came to having grief for them. I bowed down heavily as one that mourneth for his mother. So David is shown how that his attitude toward them was much different when they were in times of distress, when they were in sickness, than their attitude is toward him now. They turned against him. And he's going to further illustrate that beginning in this next verse. Verse 15. But in mine adversity they rejoiced and gathered themselves together. Yea, the abjects gathered themselves together against me, and I knew it not. They did tear me and cease not. After showing how he behaved whenever they were in times of distress, when they were sick, he now shows how they behaved whenever he was in adversity. He says, but in mine adversity, they rejoiced. Whenever I had problems, whenever I was cast down, whenever I was in a state of distress and needed some relief, they didn't come to my aid. They did not act like I acted. They didn't treat me like a friend or a brother. They didn't grieve or mourn for me. They didn't pray or put on the sackcloth or humble their soul with fasting. In my adversity, they rejoiced and gathered themselves together. They had merriment over me. They took this as occasion for feeling glad. an occasion for making some kind of merriment at my expense. They gathered themselves together. Yea, the abjects gathered themselves together against me, and I knew it not. Now, this word for abjects is one that's a little bit difficult to translate, but it probably means the smiters, or the smiters with the tongue. They said things against him with the tongue, and they were then in the process of smiting David in that manner. They gathered themselves together against me. They gathered for the purpose of uniting against me, of planning or plotting against me, or of saying things that would be to my detriment, and they did it in an assembly of themselves together. And I knew it not. This phrase, I knew it not, probably means that David didn't know what kind of charges they were making, or he was not aware of having been guilty of the charges they were making. This is something that was not even in his knowledge, the things they were charging him with, things they were saying about him. He further says, they did tear me and cease not. That is, they injured him with their speakings, with the things they were saying against him, with the charges they were making. They were tearing him. It was as though they were beating him with an instrument that would tear his flesh. They did tear me and cease not. They would not stop acting in this way. He further says in verse 16, with hypocritical mockers and feasts, they gnashed upon me with their teeth. Now this phrase, hypocritical mockers and feasts, is a little hard to describe, but it seems to describe a situation in which the rich would give a feast, and then they would hire these buffoons to come in and to entertain them during the feast. They would entertain them by acting this part of hypocritical mockers. They would find someone to mock, and everyone would get a lot of joy and merriment out of their mockery. And so it seems that those who had been his friends were having feasts like this, and having those to come in and to mock David, and they would have a lot of fun out of it. They rejoiced at his problems. All the bad things they could say, they entertained themselves by being able to say these things. So with hypocritical mockers and feasts, they gnashed upon me with their teeth. The word gnashed means to express anger or to express wrath. And so it wasn't just mild-mannered jesting and fun they were having, but they really had barbs in what they said. They had a feeling behind what they said that expressed or that revealed that they were truly angry, or that they had a feeling of wrath toward him. They gnashed upon me with their teeth. And certainly this would then describe how that they just turned on David. Like a dog that was going to attack his victim. This is the way that they had done David. Gnashed upon me with their teeth. They were tearing him. They were ceasing not. It seemed that their persecution of him just simply had no end. Now, after having given a description of their bad conduct against him, he begins in verse 17 to appeal to God for deliverance. He says, Lord, how long wilt thou look on? Now, it's not that David doubted that God would deliver him or that God could deliver him, but what he was asking here is, how long was it going to be? How could God apparently sit by and so calmly observe this great injustice being done to him? How could God just let it happen and then seem to not do anything about it immediately? How could God wait before taking action? How long would I look on? And we're going to have many times in this life in which we are persecuted, in which we are having injustice done to us, in which we are going to be receiving adverse treatment at the hands of others. And so we may ask the same question, how long, Lord, wilt thou look on? It doesn't mean that we have lost our faith in God, but we are wondering, why do we have to endure this for so long? Now, of course, this is a question that only God has the answer to. And there are going to be times in which we just have to wait with patience, which we have to trust in God and pray to God and continue to do the things that are right and give God His own good time to do what He wants to do about the matter. We continue to trust and to depend upon God. This may be a time in which He is trying our faith and trying our patience. This may be the time in which we're going to be able to show how much faith we truly do have, because if we faint, if we begin to lose heart, and to feel that God is not going to help us and that we cannot trust in and depend upon God, then we have failed the test. So, Lord, how long wilt thou look on? He says here, rescue my soul from their destructions. Now, the thing that they're doing to me is tearing me up. It is ruining me. It is destroying me. Their destructions, their actions are destroying me. So rescue my soul. Come to my aid. Yeah, give me relief from this problem. He says further, my darling from the lions. The lions here indicate his enemies. Those that are opposing him are properly classified as lions. They are so wicked. They are so ruthless. They have no mercy. And so they are no better than lions. And when he says, my darling, he's talking about my only one. This is the only soul, this is the only body, the only life that I have. This is the most precious thing to me. Rescue it, save it from these lions, from these who have no regard for it, these who are doing their very best to destroy me. So it's an appeal to God to deliver him. And it's an appeal that we may find ourselves able to use the very same words that David is using right here. It describes adequately the conduct of those who are wicked, who are opposing us, who are doing all that they can to destroy us, and so we ask God to come to our rescue. How long are you going to wait? How much longer is it going to be before I am given relief from this great distress? In verse 18 he says, I will give thee thanks in the great congregation. I will praise thee among much people. Showing that David is willing to give back to God the very thing that God wants if God gives him relief. That is thanks to God. One of the few things that we can do to ever repay God, and of course this is not a repayment in kind, but it is the thing that God expects us to give back to him, is going to be thanksgiving to him. And so David promises, I will give thee thanks. He says, I will do it in the great congregation. That is, I'm going to do it in a public manner. I'm going to do it so that people can see what I am doing. It's not going to be private, off in a closet someplace, but I'm going to thank thee so that others can see that I have this great expression of thanks, that I have this great gratitude unto thee for what thou hast done. He further says in verse 18, I will praise thee among much people. The same idea. Among this much people really is translated strong people, but it means numbers of people. Not just a private thanksgiving, but one in which those round about him are going to obviously see that David is truly giving thanks to God. Verse 19, he pleads by saying, let not them that are mine enemies wrongfully rejoice over me. Now, to wrongfully rejoice really means the enemies that are not justifiably his enemies. They have no reason to really be his enemy. David has done nothing to bring this about. David has done nothing to deserve this kind of treatment. And so we ask God not to let them do this. Do not let them rejoice over me when they have no cause to do this, to take advantage of me like this. He further says in verse 19, neither let them wink with the eye that hate me without a cause. Now this winking with the eye, a literal translation of this is to bite. It could be a biting of any kind, but when he's talking about the eye, then it's the eyelid that's biting as it closes. And it probably literally does mean to wink, as we think of winking. And this would be an expression of triumph. To wink like this would be a sign that this person was triumphing over David, or that they had somehow or other a reason to feel haughty in regard to David. So neither let them wink with the eye that hate me without cause. That is, they hate me, but they do not have a justifiable reason for doing this. I have not deserved this kind of treatment. I am innocent of the reason that they give for holding me up as an enemy and treating me like this. And so he's asking God to hold back the actions of his enemy. And it's most appropriate for us to do the same thing. If we have an enemy that's acting against us, that's acting bad toward us, then it's most appropriate that we ask God to hold back these actions. That we ask God to do something to interfere with the activities, the motives, the means that the enemies of ours would use against us. And God can do this, and God will do this. God has all kinds of ways that he can use. Things at his disposal that we haven't even imagined ourselves that he can use to stop our enemies from bringing about some kind of harm or bad treatment to us. And of course, this idea of asking God to stop our enemies from doing these bad things to us, it is appropriate for us to ask this, and it in no wise is asking that evil or harm come upon our enemies. We're not asking God to do anything bad to them, just simply stop them. Do not let them carry this thing through. Do not let them continue with this kind of activity. And if we're going to ask God to stop our enemies from doing this, then it means that we also have to have the attitude that we ourselves want to be most cautious that we never do this to someone else. This request to not let our enemies do this thing to us should also be a reflection of our true attitude toward others. We need to be most careful that we not find ourselves in the position that these enemies of David were in, that we're not mistreating someone else, that we're not treating them wrong, that we're not accusing them of something that they're not to be accused of, that we're not harboring some kind of feeling toward them, or even saying something behind their back that would be of a slanderous nature, and we really do not know that this is true or not. We really do not have any reason to be saying this, but we're saying it with some kind of malice or evil intent, or even saying it out of being just careless in our speech. If we're going to pray that God not let others treat us this way, then we have to be most careful that we not act in such a way that we're violating this very same principle ourselves, that we're not treating others in such a way as David was being treated. So let's be very careful, very cautious in our treatment of others. Anything that would be of a derisive nature, anything that might tend to run down or bring any harm to the character of another person, we do not want to be guilty of it, for if we do, then we're going to be no better than the enemies of David were, and they'll justifiably be able to pray to God to stop us. We're going to close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.